Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Hello, everybody.
Mr. Bryce Castillo.
Oh, hi, that's me. Hello.
And Mr. Brian Brushwood.
Yo-ho!
Gentlemen, there's been a story out there that I've hesitated for us to discuss because sometimes you hear something, you go, oh, that's fun, and you go, no, that's stupid. That's really, really stupid. And the more people talk about it, maybe not as many people realize that it's stupid, and this could be very bad.
Sorry, you're saying that you have a Naruto run around this subject?
Yes. So there is a started off as kind of a joke Facebook post, and then it sort of grew from there. And that was, hey, let's find out what's at Area 51. What if we all storm Area 51 and go see what's there?
Yeah, they can't stop us all, as the tagline says. According to the initial Facebook post, the plan is for everybody to Naruto run through the gunfire that would come from the military defending what is indeed still an active military base. Man, I'm actually with you, because initially I thought that this was going to be very, very – this is like a very funny thing. The memes immediately just became something that was very – funny, but like lately, the more people that I hear kind of talk about it seriously, I'm like, wait, is this going to be just like a tremendous tragedy? It's like, is this going to be like a weird, like reverse Kent State by way of like a meme apocalypse?
I mean, it's got to be that somebody somewhere decides, hey, what's a good way to spend $100,000 that makes this a win for everybody? And, you know, they wait for everybody to show up, and there's like a welcoming committee, and they take them on a tour, and then they, tell them, these are the crazy things we're working on. Oh, that's an alien. Don't tell anyone, or whatever. Like it becomes a Universal Orlando ride or something.
Well, one, it's the military. Two, Area 51, it's not like it's just off the road there and you just turn there and go show up at the gates. There is a tremendous amount of desert that you have to get through to get there. And there's private security that patrols the outer areas of that. And there are fences and there's other stuff. It's also the closest towns to it have a tiny amount of infrastructure. So the first concern for the towns are like, hey, there's like 80 hotel rooms here. You know, we're afraid of a bunch of people showing up on the highways and clogging things up, which, you know, you could say like, that problem, that's their problem. And it's like, well, it's like, you know, Brian, you know, the desert, you know, what happens? People don't know the desert, come out to the desert and are like, oh, let's go do a fun thing in the desert.
Yeah. And that's usually the opening of a Weird Thing segment. I mean, here's my point is like, these people are going to show up, and it seems like the cheaper option is to spend the money to put on a show for them and to take them around. And plus also, we all know that virtually nothing super secret or interesting is happening at the site that has been traditionally called Area 51. And instead, you know, figure out some good to come of that. But it's like, it does seem insane that they would meet force with force in this situation. Well, it seems like
I'm
you would take that wind.
I'm not worried about the, like they're going to gun. They're never going to get that close. My concern is more like, do we want hundreds of people roaming through the desert like idiots, thinking that it's that? That's concern number one. I don't think they should open up. The base does do secret stuff still. They still have the active wing over in Las Vegas that sends crews there. They work on stuff, you know, and stealth drone tech, things like this. They do not want to bring people there because it is a active military facility and a research facility. And also, like, who knows? Who knows how many people really show up? Probably going to be an overblown thing. My issue is just, like, the people just, you know, wandering, you know, trying to get there, wandering the desert and stuff. And that, you know, I don't know how you really try to organize a thing like this. But I don't think it's, hey, everybody, no, come on over. It's cool. Come check out our military base.
So let me ask you a question from the internet side of this then. Because in my mind, I'm like, all right, this is funny. Somebody has this funny idea. They obviously make it a joke. It's posted in S-posting because I'm in shambles. Like, this, for an internet crowd, has all the hallmarks of, look at this silly thing that I'm liking on Facebook, and now I get likes for sharing this silly joke, mm-hmm. right? And then it kind of, like, played out a little bit. You see the pictures of military people. There's, like, leaked photos of military people trying to explain what Naruto running is, which is, you know, again, it was all very, very funny until it kept going. And then the more people started talking about it seriously, the more I got worried about it. And now it's kind of made me think, like, is this just kind of the story of the internet, where now, even if you are telling what you know to be a sarcastic joke, if it hits the right tenor in our society, eventually someone's not going to take it like that, and now you're responsible for it? Like, should this be taken down? Should Facebook take it down? Should the creator take it down? Is there any, like, or is it now just kind of beyond?
I mean, that's worth touching on, the fact that, tongue-in-cheek, wink-wink or not, this is a stated conspiracy to raid a United States government military base. Like, there's no squinting that causes it to be anything other than that. And at that point, like, you know, let's say, and I think we're all on the same page that we don't expect gunfire to erupt or anything like that, but let's say such a thing did happen. Where does culpability land? Does it land at the feet of Facebook? Does it land at the feet of the guy who thought he was making a joke and something went out of his control? Or does it just land at the feet of people storming a desert base?
Well, I think it starts with getting closer to when the event is going to be, and if it's not, like, disavowed, you know, that'll be a problem for the creator. Because right now the creator's like, yeah, it's a funny joke. It's a funny kind of, like, let's all just do this to see what's there, because it's funny. And then it builds momentum, and it's like, oh, a few thousand people sign on, that's funny. The problem is when you do get to a couple million, you're like, man, chances of a few hundred people showing up or some other people, you know, going there, it increases. And, you know, if they think there's going to be a real threat, you know, roads nearby, they're going to stop, they're going to ask people, they're going to turn people away, tell them, hey, whatever. And, like, I'm not terribly worried about the ability to contain this or manage this, but I do worry a bit, though, that I'm like, man, like, I hope people realize it's a joke, because, you know, like, this, I don't know if you've ever seen this or seen it as close as you can get to it. The desert alone is no friggin' joke. You know?
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, that is something that I hadn't even processed. But now that I have fresh horrors in my mind, as implanted by Andrew Main, I'm glad that I have an even fuller sense of things that can go wrong. That the tragedy would not be a bunch of people, you know, walking hand in hand into gunfire. It would be somebody just being an idiot and not realizing that there's a lot of desert between here and there, running out of gas, and God forbid something happening to them. Right. Like, you know, not being hydrated. There's a million things that can go wrong in the desert, especially when you're just, you know, doing something as a lark and you're not planning for it. But beyond that, like, I don't know. This is, like, a lot of the kind of growing up of the internet is that I'd always sort of operated in a kind of pre-fully operating internet mindset, where it's like, hey, look, and 99 times out of 100, you're telling a joke to your self-selected group. And people know the rules of the road, and you're able to kind of you know, have it exist there. But now, more and more, things kind of break out, and I don't know where the new rules are. And with this, it's like, this was really funny to me for the first, like, week, and all the memes were great. And now it's like, it's funny because you mentioned this today. I was listening to an interview last night with Chuck Klosterman, and Klosterman was saying, like, he brought it up unsolicited and said he's on this book tour now, and somebody asked him about it, and he was like, I have no idea what you're talking about. When is this supposed to be? And somebody else shot their hand up and said, like, September 20th, like, because they knew immediately what the Facebook thing was. And it was like, oh, like, he was, like, frightened that even if it is a joke, the fact that, like, more than one person in the audience was, like, asking him about it, now it's like, oh crap, like, and that made me scared.
So, well, go to Google Maps, Bryce, if you can, look up Groom Lake, and you can see that it's a very isolated place. You've got mountain ranges around it, whatever. It's literally, it's not like, hey, we just park our car here and we just run across the field towards that. There, you know, it can be a fence line there, but the actual base is way, go to satellite view.
And that sort of brings up the thought in my mind is we're all aware that however many RSVP yeses you get for a party, you can expect less than that number to show up. But I think in general that we tend to think, maybe 1 in 10 will show up, maybe 1 in 50. But if the number is 1 in 200, that still means 50,000 people, 100,000 people are going to show up. Let's say it's 1 in 500. That's still the population bigger than my hometown showing up in the middle of the desert. One in a thousand. Let's say 1 in 1,000. It's a lot of people.
Let's get the van right now. Weird Things Desert Survival Kits.
Those memes were so funny.
Oh yeah. It does look like they've actually taken the actual page. What we were showing on screen was the cached version. It does look like the original group, They Can't Stop All of Us, is not available anymore.
Well, and
apparently, and
so here's a sideways vector. Yes, I understand 100% why Facebook would take this down. This is nothing but liability incarnate. But if they're willing to take down a joke idea of taking on the man, then that's a pretty good indicator that Facebook would also take down a page about taking on the man.
Do we know if Facebook took it down, or did the organizers take it down?
I mean, it just says it's not available now.
I have not followed. I do know that there has been some hand-wringing by the creator. I have not seen a comment from Facebook. Oh, yeah, he has a fairly robust Wikipedia page, of course. I mean, it's just, you want to know actually the first time that I really felt any twinge of like, oh, wait, this is going to be bad or weirder than I thought it was going to be, was like, as soon as everybody was like, or you started hearing people that were like, oh, well, that's not where they keep the real alien tech. That's in this other place. Like, it's like, oh, no, wait, this is broken out beyond, beyond just like the internet joke community. So that this is okay. So it looks like the
creator took it down, Matty Roberts.
Yeah.
It's one of these things where it's like, you're like, there's no villain here. There's no bad person. It's because it's like, oh, this is funny. Like, yeah, like, hey, do you want to like, you guys want to see what's there? Yeah, click on there. Let's go there. Let's do this. And then now you're, and I think the creator's like realizing like, oh, geez, like this. That large of a number.
If there's a bad guy, I perceive that there are two adults in this story. One adult is everybody who is in on the joke, who knew that they were making a joke. The other adult is the U.S. government, who rolled their eyes and said, okay, you're making a joke. And if there's a tragedy, it's all the children who everybody realized, oh, wait, they're really going to go storm the candy store.
Facebook's an adult here, right?
They're the third adult. Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, it's like this is being spread on their platform. And so if something bad happens, then they were the gas that took the match and made it a conflagration.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, man. Recently, for those who didn't know, I went to a family reunion over the weekend, and there was somebody, there's a few small business owner entrepreneurs in my family, and one of them was asking like, hey, what are you doing on Facebook? And I found myself weirdly having to explain that it's like, I find Facebook gross, and I hate the fact that, you know, time and time again, they figure out a way to tell me one thing and then squeeze money out of me when they change the rules, so I just don't do anything, and it felt dumb. So I find myself weirdly hating Facebook, but not being able to properly articulate why. But this situation, I mean, they sold ads. They sold soap ads the entire time all of this happened, and claimed no culpability, took no action, and was like, thanks for all the attention.
Hold on, wait a minute. I'm just starting my Facebook group. Storming the Schwood compound. They can't stop all of us.
We definitely cannot.
Enjoy. If you show up, bring plumbing.
The PVC entrance fee.
Yeah, right? The PVC. The P stands for payment.
You should post like a wedding registry.
We're like, hey, I hear you're coming.
Yeah, exactly. Soap dish? Could you just give me a soap dish?
All this sort of underscores our curiosity about a place like Area 51 and the mysteries of, like, what does the government have? Like, are there aliens? What's really going on? And the problem with that answer is that, you know, you talk to people who confidently believe in this thing. It's nothing will convince them otherwise. You know? Because as long as there's a secret, there's like, yeah, there's this place we can't go. We can't know what's going on there because turns out, we turned a 2.5-millimeter radar dish into a 2.2-millimeter radar dish. But nobody can know this.
Keep in mind, they could show up. That class of people could show up, be handed a badge that says, hey, this RFID will identify you as a 5-star gold general. You have the run of the place. Go nuts. They will spend all day running around, and the story they will post is like, well, I didn't get the real Area 51.
You know, that was a story Clinton had asked, apparently, like, when his first time in office.
Oh, he was like, aliens?
What's the deal with the aliens? And they're like, they're no aliens. It's like, oh, okay.
and by the way, for anybody who hasn't heard us talk about this before, I think I speak for the podcast in general when I say that our take is the fairly sensible take that at the height of the Cold War, it was very tactically effective to have everybody thinking about aliens while you were testing out nutty Cold War weapons. So there was no incentives to disavow people of crazy alien notions. And now we're at a place where there's still no incentive to disavow people of nutty alien notions.
I don't think that there's ever going to be a way, a time where people are like,
it is tactically correct to say that it is aliens. I am not saying this under coercion.
But my point is like right now you can't point to a specific reason to disavow people. But back in the 90s, back when the Soviet Union was still around, it was actively an important thing to not disavow people of that notion for to keep more chaos in the Cold War communications.
Yeah, when you're dealing with military tech and things like this, the highest level of security, if the press runs out there and says UFO, more important for the government to keep the military tech a secret than,
right. Well, you can imagine somebody doing the game theory where they're like, okay, what is the perfect way to phrase something such that my Soviet counterpart might think that we actually have alien technology? And then you would say some version of, we can neither confirm nor deny. What's this over here?
Do you think, though, that like kind of the military intelligence level, they ever really expected the Soviets to think that we had alien tech?
No, but I suspect that there's value in, you know, as a wise man once said, chaos is a ladder, right? And even if the Soviet intelligence didn't believe it, if the Soviet, even if it's a lottery ticket with a 1 in 100 chance of paying off, the chance that the Soviet general populace might believe it, or that Americans might act in a different way because they believe we have enlightened technology from aliens or whatever. Like there's so many chaos vectors that it seems like it would be better to press the chaos button than to not press it.
Do you know who said chaos is a ladder?
Littlefinger, yeah.
Played by?
I was going to say Peter Baelish. the guy from the mayor from The Wire.
Yeah. Who also plays Dr. J. Allen Hynek in Project Blue Book, Brian.
What?
The story about the true, based on the real man investigating UFO conspiracies.
Oh, that's fantastic.
My friend's father.
I'm glad I finally cracked the code on that one.
Dun, dun, dun.
I mean, do you think that that's going to be a coincidence? Come on.
I met him at a Project Blue Book party. And dude, talk about an awesome premiere party. I just want to tell you, there was like dessert bars everywhere, like teppanyaki. It was incredible. Every other premiere I've been to since then just pales in comparison.
Yeah. This is no Blue Book. A disappointed Andrew Mayne exhales.
I'll tell you what is better than the Blue Book premiere party, and that is that? Being part of an amazing club of over 280 beautiful patrons that keep us loud, live, and independent over at Weird Things. That's patreon.com/weirdthings. Hit us up, man. We love staying on the reg. We love bringing you the weird news. We love telling you about everything that your plebe coworkers are going to be talking about next week. We were way out in front of this Area 51 thing and then sat on it for a long time. And
well, if we did cover it a few weeks ago.
Yeah, but Andrew wasn't around.
Yeah, but people were on the tip when it happened, too.
Yep. So head on over to patreon.com/weirdthings. Do us a favor. If you enjoy this show, just a buck an episode. That's not too much. Why don't you hit us up?
Hell yeah. And also, you get the After Things show before anybody else. That's where we talk about all of our projects, how we go about making our creativity our living, and, of course, answer any questions that you guys have. So head on over, patreon.com/weirdthings.
Yep.
So you're sitting there with your hoverboard going, man, I've got this. Like the real floating kind of hoverboard. Like, man, this hoverboard's awesome.
Like a hexcopter or a quadcopter or something?
Yeah, one of those. It's got a bunch of turbines in it, you know, gas-powered turbines. You stand on it, you float.
Gas-powered, right? Man. And so, meanwhile, you're like the hobgoblin, just extreme sporting around looking for Peter Parker because you're still mad at him.
Yeah, and you're like, you know, I know, like, France and England were cool now. But if this Brexit goes south, we're going to need a fast way. And you're French, by the way. You're like, we're going to need to invade them fast, like real fast.
What's funny is
we're going over the channel. They can't stop us all.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, how long is the English Channel? Like, 10 miles?
Well, it's most narrowest. Yeah, it's short like that. But yeah. So French inventor, a guy made his hoverboard. And what he says was just a demonstration, but I think is a dry run for a hobgoblin invasion of England. He decided to try to cross the channel like a week or so ago. No dice, missed trying to land on a platform and refuel. Guess what? Did it again. Succeeded.
I'll tell you what. This dude wants to make international headlines. He does the same thing, only from Mexico to Texas. And just say, like, try building a wall over this, MFR. Boo!
And then gets shot down by some Texas
No way, guy. Dude. Nobody would shoot down a Frenchman. Come on.
and the irony of the Maginot line is lost on nobody. But yeah, it's cool. If you get a chance to check out the video, it's pretty damn cool. Very, very cool. Hats off to this crazy guy and his magical flying thing. Frankie Zapata.
So this is gas powered then, right?
Yep.
Man, God, that's got to be a wild experience. Yeah, I mean, that's like just literal flying.
It's a 22-mile trip, and he stopped halfway to refuel.
Oh, okay. So he has to keep. But I guess
at some point you end up just making a helicopter, right? And then you're just flying on top of a helicopter. So it does make sense. A couple of six-cylinder engines or whatever.
I mean, turbines, yeah.
Yeah, it definitely looks cool. I mean, like Andrew is not kidding. Like, this looks like Green Goblin, Hobgoblin kind of a board, right? Although I'm always curious, can we hear the sound? Can we hear how loud
it's
got
to be like a wee. It's got to be like a
when he's still off, a little way off the coast here, but we can play the from their video. There's also a helicopter following him.
Do you think it's doing like that same kind of like segue, like auto correction or like one of those?
Oh, it's got to, right?
Because rollerboards.
He says this thing takes an incredible amount of time to learn to balance. I don't think it is, because those things, if it were electric, it would be easier. But when you're trying to go from combustion engine.
Yeah, it's a little more difficult to fine tune the individual fans to correct.
Yeah, they don't have the control units and stuff. So that's why it's the inventor's the guy that flies it.
Man, you run into one owl, you're boned.
A lot of owls over the channel?
I mean...
over the English channel.
Oh, Bryce, don't get me started about those famous channel owls. Just, oh.
I would like to think
I see you in the chat puts it best. He says, I mean, if he had a chair on this thing, everybody would be like, meh. You're right. It's only the fact that he's standing on it that makes it extraordinary.
I don't know. It's incredibly small.
Get out of here. If he had a little chair, I wouldn't care if he had some zinc on his nose and he was in a lifeguard's outfit.
He could make it. He could take two of them and make it look like a hover bike. It'd be awesome.
He should have two of them. I don't know why he refueled. He could have had one on each leg and be all like roller skating guy.
No, I mean, I don't know. So wait, so Brian, you don't think that this is something that is that you can see yourself interacting with at any point?
Oh, no. I love everything about this. It's just that I am very aware that we are novelty seeking individuals. And ICU, I think, brings up a legitimate point that if it looks too much like the helicopter that's following him, then all of a sudden it doesn't activate any of our serotonin rushes.
It looks nothing like a helicopter. It's a guy standing on a thing you could put in your trunk.
Well, that's a weird way to restate exactly what I just said, Andrew, but I agree.
So putting a chair on it downplays that. Okay, I get it. I'm sorry, Brian, for restating obviously. No, you put a chair on it, it's an awesome flying chair.
Okay, well, why not put a box around it and also a wing?
A blade.
Motor size 50 friggin' times. You're like, hey, look at my jetpack. There are little wings on the back. It's just an airplane. Not impressed.
I think Brian's just afraid of being this guy.
Here at the
guy.
San Diego Yacht and Boat Show. Look over there.
And it starts right now.
One of the greatest videos of all time. For those of you who have not seen it, that's the guy who's on the water jet. Like the water jetpack, so it just shoots the water out of whatever ocean you're over, but he just knocks over the host in the drink and it's over.
I'll tell you the thing where I go, okay, I'm not impressed, is when you say, oh, company releases new flying car and it's 40 friggin' quadcopters, you know, carrying a capsule. And you're like, yeah, that's. Yes, I think 40 quadcopters could probably carry a human. I think that just needs a lot of duct tape, you know. But
so all right, so the idea is that for this to be a fascinating tech that captures the imaginations of people, it can't be reinventing the helicopter, right? It's got to be something that as it iterates and gets smaller and more powerful, that it would be substantively different than a helicopter. Does that capitalize it?
I would say that it seems to me like what they've anytime somebody figures out a way to match the prototypical version of something extraordinary in our mind, whether it's perceived to be a person flying or with those hydro jet packs, what looks like an Iron Man outfit or something like that. I think that stimulates us and gets us really stoked about it. And I think this guy did an extraordinary job of taking what looks like a comic book sci-fi thing and making it work.
Yeah, I'm with you. You should have thrown a pumpkin bomb at somebody and just really showed his boss.
That would have been amazing.
Speaking of pushing the frontiers of tech, Planetary Society had its light sail 2 unfurl, and it worked in space, I should add.
This is the one where we covered it was one of many CubeSats that went up, the experiment was to create a solar sail and to test the feasibility of that.
Yep, and so they did the unfurlment of it. Finally, they had the payload got deployed. We covered that, and then finally, what they did was the opened up, light, sun, photons caught it and started to push the thing along.
Oh wow! Awesome.
Did we get specific measurements on how effective it was, or whether it matched expectations?
The sail is 32 square meters, 340 square feet for those playing at home. And as far as it has the ability to raise its orbit As far as the other specifics on that, I have not dived deep. I am a backer, but I haven't really paid attention to it.
I mean, as long as it's able, even if it's not really able to go anywhere, if it's able to just keep it in orbit by virtue of, you know, external forces through the sun, that's extraordinary.
Absolutely, because this thing can have, you know, can use solar energy also to make adjustments as far as changing the shape of the sail. That's what's so exciting about this technology is, yeah, you just don't need to have fuel. The thing just uses the energy from the sun to keep going and going and going. In theory, it can keep going faster, you know, and, you know, it's a small step, but it's a really awesome step.
That's great. Congrats on the Planetary Society and all of their ongoing work.
Yeah. It's fun. It's a fun organization that's not just sending you a cool magazine. They're doing really cool things like this. So I've enjoyed watching what they're doing.
Hey, Andrew, forgive me if I take us on a quick side journey, but I was hanging out at my family reunion and I was flipping channels on the Discovery. They were doing the Shark Week. And
was this year?
Yeah, I'll be good goddamned if you aren't on it on a prime Friday night time slot. What's going on with that?
Well, Discovery Channel found out about my extreme propensity towards seasickness and said, "Man, we would like to document a guy who gets really seasick going out to sea and just to see what happens." And, you know, so, yeah. So, my Ghost Diver special aired. That was a lot of fun, a lot of work, and it was exciting to finally see that thing come together and air. So,
yeah. Is it talking out of school to talk about the order of shoots or whatever, or is that too behind the scenesy for us?
No. We shot last year. And the sequence of the show is pretty accurate. I mean, they tell, well, I went to Miami to learn about sharks 3 minutes later. Now that I know about sharks.
Right. Well, no. I guess specifically, I don't know if it was public knowledge that you had shot this a little over a year ago, and that there, I guess it's a testament to how good it was that rather than try to slot it into a bad slot last year, they held onto it and put it in a prime slot this year. So, but it was so much fun. I loved how,
Brian, you know more about the mysteries of how they schedule stuff than I do.
I assume, and this is Cord Killers, Brian, talking right now, like in general.
Yeah, no, they shoot stuff. They'll shoot stuff because they were doing several shoots, for instance, in one part of the world, like, okay, we're going to double back and do a couple episodes there or whatever. But yeah, so, you know, it's one of these things. So I did it last year. They're like, yeah, this was probably going to air next year. I'm like, okay,
that's cool.
You know, works out better for me. But still, we were still adding stuff to it though. We've been adding to it up until a couple weeks before. I was doing some more little bits and pieces for it because these things take a while to put together. So it was a lot of fun.
My favorite part of the series or of the special was at the end when, you guys may or may not have laid out a pitch for what next year's Ghost Diver special might look like, where you talked about, well, I don't know, it seems to me like if I had it to do over again, I would add this, that, and the other thing. Wouldn't that be interesting? Anyway, who knows? End of episode.
Yeah, it was, we shot this thing in a very short, it was the fastest thing I've ever done as far as it comes together to put to TV. So you watch the show and you see that version one of the suit, That was not the plan. And, you know, it's just that under TV deadlines, you know, you'd often don't get to check in on things as much to see the development of things. And sometimes you're very surprised when you see, oh, that's the way that turned out. Okay, I guess we got to go shoot this now. And then reiterating very, very quickly. And, you know, it was like I had multiple ideas for things I wanted to do. And basically the version two was something that was like, well, this is another thing. And let me basically have this ready to go. And
in that regard, and we might be wading into After Things territory here, I actually really adored that the scope of this first special was not Endgame, but instead was Iron Man 1, where it's just like, Hey, here's an idea. Here's a step in the right direction. Here's a prototype. Here's a revision on the prototype. Wouldn't it be great to see more? End of movie. You know, I deeply adored all of that.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was, I liked, if anything, I'd love to show more of the behind the scenes process of, you know, how we're trying to adapt and figure out. And, you know, we, you know, because we were doing experiments on seeing like the light camouflage. Like we were doing a, we only had a very short window of time to do this. So I wanted to do a thing with two turtle decoys, and you don't even see them in the show, but we have one that has lights and one that doesn't. We're trying to get everything ready to go. And by the time it's time to test it, it's dark out. So yeah. This light decoy that's supposed to match sunlight is now a neon sign.
Oh,
and,
right.
You know, we go to test it and the sharks go eat the, you know, go start nibbling on the thing that's glowing. And it's like, I guess it's a failure. And I'm like, or maybe if we tested this in the afternoon, like we planned, it's not a production or anything. If it's anything, it's on me and trying to do all these technical things. So let me make that clear. You know,
well, and that's like, you know, just for people to understand, like this was a for real tech build. Right. Like this is something where it all had to come together. And once you are shooting, like this is like the train has left the station. Right. There's only X amount of time that you have to build it. There's only X amount of time you have to test it. There's only X amount of times that you have the opportunity to shoot it with the crew. And then you're literally globetrotting to the point where you are like about to go, you know, deal with this stuff in the water with these sharks, which is just insane.
6 days before going to Australia to find out we won't be able to use a shark cage. And had the build one worked the way I wanted to, never would it, you know, the only way it would have worked was with the shark cage. And that was a thing where it's like, you find out, nope, no shark cage. By the way, you were going to have like, you know, we were going to have five divers. And again, this is just the reality of when you're trying to produce stuff, you know, any scale. It is the production team I worked with was fantastic. You know, the ability to adapt, the people I worked with were incredible, and I'm so lucky. And that's just thing you have to roll with it, because they're like, oh, shark cages got banned in Australia. What do we do now? And they're like, okay. you know, here's this other thing I've been working on. Let me put this together. Let me do this. So it was the behind the scenes was fun, because it was just trying to get things done.
Do you think that as a modern culture, we're a little bit more aware of the limitations of unscripted programming, where it's like, I don't know. You can be set. You can understand that something real and wonderful is happening, but that there are certain realities to storytelling that need to be done. For example, if you're going to step out of a shark cage, you need to get the shot of you stepping out of a shark cage. And maybe that happens after the original event or what have you.
I think that people are, people overestimate how much time and resources you have when you put on a production.
Oh,
They think that, like, you know, you have millions of dollars and years to plan to go do something, and you're not dealing with 5 days before, no, we can't use a shark cage. You know, no, we can't have cabling going down there. They don't understand that. They think that everything you're doing, you get all the time in the world. You're not trying to make decisions in the next 30 minutes, because that's the only chance to get the shot. On the other hand, like, yeah, when they see things edited, you think like, yeah, no, this took 20 minutes. This was 20 minutes of time that we're going to spit into 5 minutes, because, you know, standing there waiting for sharks to show up, you know, is boring, you know, until they do show up, and then it's terrifying.
I'll tell you what, JC Calhoun in the chat says he's not a fan of the way they narrate these shows. I was jealous, because you didn't have to narrate your own stuff. Like, somebody who is not you is talking about how great you are. Whereas, like, when I did Hacking the System, there was so much, anyway, I'm awesome because I did this, and luckily I know this secret. And that was challenging for me. Whereas, like, if I could have had somebody else telling me that I'm great, then I would have loved that.
They have a format. They do. And so you go into that, and you know, they have a format. And I was very glad that they, for a Shark Week show, I had the only name Shark Week show, you know, my name in the title and this, but it was, I'm thrilled to discover, this is so outside of what they've ever done for Shark Week before, like this too. And that was, you know, like, hey, we're going to do a build show with a thing like this. And how do we even go about doing it? And you try to fit it into that format as much as possible. So doing the narration and stuff like they do in other shows worked out well. But you know, it's cool. We're watching the video right now, and you can see, you
it
know,
looks
of the
so good. The 2.0,
doesn't it though?
It looks incredible.
Can I can I just say this? Because, I mean, look, we have in various incarnations, all three of us worked in television and created stuff. And, you know, the labor that it takes to do it. And you know what the idea is versus the execution. But I was so pumped to see how people connected to this, not only via people watching it and certainly in our community, but also the press. I mean, this was a concept that people found fascinating as it was that when you were coming up with the pitch and you were pitching it in the room. And that is so rare and so fun. And I was so excited to see that happen because, again, there's a million steps between idea and what shows up on screen. And it was so great to see there be so much excitement around the idea and the execution of putting it on there. So I think that's just a well-deserved victory lap for you.
Yeah, it was really nice to see that. And, you know, that was, you know, seeing it make Drudge Report, seeing it make New York Post and seeing those things.
That's a moment where it's just like between Andrew and I, like that's just one of those weird websites that has always like just been a part of things. But to watch it kind of expand, you know, I know inside media getting drudged is something that is like, oh, yeah, we'll all high five because that's just for whatever reason, it occupies a space in your mind. And to just watch like, boom. I kept going to my phone and just looking at it and just like smiling. It just made me
smile. Yeah. Well, you know, thank you guys for your support while doing it and cooperating with it. And it's still one of those things the actual experience itself, I still haven't fully processed. I mean, it is you see that in the show. And I thought the way the show is portrayed, where you see me step out there in the suit in the moment where first without the suit and the sharks being around me, amazing. And in the moment where, you know, everything comes together, we had no idea what was going to happen. I'm like, I'm probably going to go out here and it's going to be just like the last time I came in here, you know, stepped outside, you know, the sharks are going to come up or whatever. And, you know, it'll be like, we gave it a shot. And then, you know, they didn't. It was really, really, we had no idea what was going to happen.
Okay. And can I throw a pitch out? And this is not to you, Andrew. I don't expect you to approve of anything I'm about to do. But I think it's fair to say that we're all fans of Elon Musk here. And I think it's fair to say that Elon Musk is the real life Iron Man. And I think it's fair to say that the Ghost Diver armor feels a little bit like Iron Man. So I'm just going to say, if we were ever going to kindle a friendship between Andrew Main and Elon Musk, seems like now would be a good time for the Weird Things audience to ask what Elon Musk thinks of the stealth Ghost Diver armor.
Let's not go there.
I'm just saying. You guys.
He's like, wait a minute. You mean the guy who was bitching about his Tesla last week?
Yeah.
No, congratulations, man. I'm so excited. My extended family, you know, they're not in television, but they instantly grokked what the experiment was and they instantly loved it. I heard my cousin behind me saying like the moment you stepped out into those great whites swimming around, there was like, holy cow. I mean, there was something visceral about the whole thing that was just wonderful.
There's so much like what you don't see, which is like we're in this submersible, which has to be lowered off the back of the boat, and we're like in these 3-foot swells. So you get into it, and it's like a carnival ride where all of a sudden it gets hoisted over the back, whoosh, you're ducked under the water. The first thing I see is a great white just sitting out there, just looking at me like,
odd, like, bro, hey, you're new here.
I'm like, you know, I'm like, oh my god. And then we start lowering down, and because of the swells, the thing is going up and down and around. And as Andy Casagrande is the camera guy, he's the shark reach, he's an amazing guy. He's the guy, the one who's shooting this and controlling the thing. We're being swung around and we're trying to get next to this reef and we smash into the reef. And I'm like, this is like the worst carnival ride ever because outside there are all these great white sharks. Finally, we get detached. We're going around and then I hear this. And I'm like, what's that sound? He's like, "Oh, we lost one of the motors." I'm like, "Oh, geez." And then Ruby's like, "We got another one." So he keeps going and go, "Bzzz." And then I hear this. I'm like, "What's that sound?" He taps me on the shoulder and points up. And there's a great white gnawing on a float on top of the submersible.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm not even at the bottom yet. Finally, we get to the bottom. He undoes these. Along the way, he taps me and points to my foot because my foot's sticking out of the side of the cage. And he's like, "No, don't do that." And then finally, we get to the bottom. He opens up. He opens up and goes, "Kshink, kshink." And there's great whites out there. And he opens up the door. He's like, "All right, do you want to get out?"
Oh.
I'm like, "Well, no, but I guess I have to at this point." Oh, and like I almost didn't have a shield, which, I'm still processing.
See, this is the show I wanted. I want to see after watching this.
I mean, from the perspective of somebody that has been a part of many harebrained Andrew Main schemes, you know, I've been there behind the warehouse trying to ride a tiny motorcycle through a fake suitcase and trying to duck the mirror on the way out and hitting my head. There is just something so amazing about watching this idea, like any of your other concepts for tricks and illusions and, big spectacles that have come together either on television or for other purposes, that this like just got to exist on that level that everybody could appreciate was just amazing. Because at the end of the day, it also is it's one of my favorite kinds of magic, which is magic without being magic, right? Yeah. It's just taking these ideas and matching the tech with it and then putting it under the most dramatic possible strain, which was you underwater with great whites.
So, Brian, I think you can relate to this part is that, you know, so it's one camera guy. We got GoPros. So it's Andy's with this wide angle camera. And so when we go to do the part where I have the suit on, I have to step away. I have to distance myself from him and the cage to isolate myself from the sharks, you know, from the shark's mind. So I'm a separate entity or whatever, because that's when they get curious when you're away and they want to go inspect that. And I get away and I'm like, "All right, this is a good distance." But I'm like, "Man, it would look better if I was further away." Like I was really further away. Sharks. I'm like,
well, and you
like,
find yourself in that moment, you're like, "Well, I mean, it's just two steps. I mean, how bad could that be?" And then you realize what you're doing.
You know, because then you can look out beyond and you realize we're on a ledge and you see fins going on below me. You're going past below me, and I'm like, "Oh, geez, you know, they're everywhere." But I'm like, I'm going to regret it if I don't get the good shot.
I got a question. The armor reads on the camera as though it would somehow provide some level of protection were you to get bit. But I'm going to assume that it's totally not the case.
No, there is nothing protective about it. If a great white decided to bite me, it would go right through. This is just a thin plastic material with a coating on it and a material on it and some sound insulation underneath it. It's designed to make me quiet. And also because the problem is that, like, if you wanted to be the best sort of armor to use underwater is actually like is chainmail, or as you know our Renaissance friends say, chain or mail. Don't write us letters, folks. We know. Is to choose chainmail, right? Because what chainmail does is it helps keep the teeth from piercing into you.
Right.
You know, there's the crushing force, which you'd rather have a broken arm than have the flesh stripped off your arm, right? So chainmail is great, but it's noisy. Is that it's maybe not noisy to us, but underwater, those metal links clinking against each other make a lot of sound, which is probably a good idea because if you're around sharks, your goal is to keep the sharks away from you. Yeah. Not to make them not know you're there and then come up and realize all of a sudden you are there.
Right.
I mean, I could go into, you know, the pros and cons, but anyhow, no, if they wanted to bite me, they would have been gone right through it.
All right. Two things. I'm going to guess if we, and for all I know, you're already talking to Discovery, so don't react, but like, I would love to see the Mark III version of this armor do full on like octopus level camouflage, where it's like you just vanish into a coral reef or something like that. And then separately, failing that, I would love to see a like a get out of jail button that you press that tases a shark. I wonder if that's a thing. Like launches two probes and just kind of like makes it unpleasant to be around.
It's a thought. I don't.
Welcome to our new segment. Brian pitches ideas for Shark Week.
In the Mark I version, you see me test in the Bahamas. There was on the back of one boat, we had, you know, like dozens of power converters that were going to cabling to connecting to me. And as I'm going underwater, I'm like, what's my biggest fear? Electrocution.
Yeah.
That's my biggest fear. Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, places to go and, you know, discovery. I had a conversation with them a week or so ago, and they threw out a scenario for some other animal, and I'm like, oh, geez.
Why does Discovery not have a show called Shark Week Shark Tank, where all people, it's nothing but people pitching ideas for Shark Week?
May happen now, but yeah, it was interesting, and, you know, I was, you know, the thing that surprised me was, like, it was different. So, like, you know, you're expecting, you're going to get people who are like, hey, this is really dumb, or this is stupid, you look weird, or whatever. I'm like, yes, you said everything I just said, you know, when I did this. But the reaction, you know, there's so many people who are like, found it so relatable, because it's like, oh, cool, what would it be like if you tried to use tech and did this? What would it be like that? And that was the fun part, was a way more positive reaction than I thought.
I mean, That's a shoot, brothers. There was like real revising of that, like the tech story of this, even relative to how television is put together to be the most dramatic. Following along throughout this entire process, this was a real time revision of how to make this as good as it possibly could be, when they actually got to where the sharks were in Australia. Just insane.
Yeah. Yep. Cool. Let's do picks.
Hey man, I got a pick. It's a little show. Took a break. Came back. I'm halfway through the premiere of season 4. It's a little show called Preacher. Best show on television. Get bent, all other shows. Preacher is great.
I've not seen the pilot or the premiere of the final season yet, but
I'm only halfway through it. This is a preemptive is a team preach moment.
My pick is Ghost Diver by Andrew Main.
Cheap shot. Not fair, not cool. That's up. Nope. We all know that you didn't have a pick prepared, and you just
sorry, Brian. Somebody likes to support our friends.
Oh, don't you son of a bug.
Go ahead and finish Preacher. I'm sure it'll be great.
Oh, you're killing me.
Bryce?
I got a pick. Over the weekend, I started playing a new game, and I've actually kind of had this like weird mixed relationship with it, but I think I like it more than the parts that I don't like. You guys know Minecraft?
Never heard of it, but go on.
Well, they got after Minecraft came out, everyone made their own Minecraft, and then now in 2019, Square Enix is, you know, who do the Dragon Quest series, have like their own Minecrafty game called Dragon Quest Builders, and they've got a new sequel out, Dragon Quest Builders 2, and it's really surprisingly cool. You end up stranded on an island, and you have
to build a set of armor to fool great whites.
Well, what's good about it is that there's a big story to it. Like, the monsters and the people of this land have like been indoctrinated to this religion where building things and creating things is sin, and destruction is the only game in town. And so it's this weird sort of
So you're being subversive. You're like the pre-millennial Gen X, you know, hey man, screw you, dad, I'm going to build.
Kind of. It's like a showing them the light, right? So you build them a toilet and they're like, oh, building stuff is good, actually. There is a surprising amount of poop in this game, night soil.
Because phase one is you have to build a septic system, and then phase two is you only have one half bath, but you have two other bathrooms you have to fill out.
The people so far have been really happy with the clay pot. So
okay,
but I think it's really cool when it opens up and it's like, hey, we need you to build a barn. These are the things that need to be in it. You can build it wherever. Go and do it. That stuff's really great.
So instead of the open world, stay alive narrative of Minecraft, you have serving the public trust.
Right. It's not survival. Like, the survival and combat stuff is very light, is a very light touch, which I really enjoy. But the parts that I haven't really liked are when you are like wrapping up a story beat and it's like, okay, for the next like 3 hours, you just need to do everything I tell you. And it's really annoying because it's like, I know you need me to go over here and you need me to go get this thing. And it's all like fetch quests and stuff. But despite all that, I think when it's a really good building system, like you play, like it feels intuitive and you can get really creative with it. So I don't know. I think it's really good. And I'm not a fan of like the Dragon Quest stuff. So
awesome.
Yeah. Dragon Quest Builders 2.
Brian, your infantile selection of a comic book made into a TV series. I'm sorry.
Oh my God. Tell me you're about to recommend The Boys. Tell me you just watched The Boys.
The creator of this show is much more. Oh, it's the same guy who created Preacher, but that's not important. Yeah, I finished The Boys. I'm not giving you a half-assed, I haven't finished it yet pick. I'm giving you a fully formed, watched the whole thing pick. And the Boys, I loved The Boys. I love Boys. What can I say? I'm a big fan of The Boys.
Don't we all, folks?
Man, oh man,
yeah,
dude.
Bryce, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
No, I'm so glad you watched all of it, man. It's so good, isn't it?
Yeah, it's I'm emotionally overcome here. What I liked about it was it was consistently good throughout. It didn't have like super big high moments in a way, like where it took itself too over the top or whatever. I mean, it was just every episode, everything was people acted. I would argue everybody acted smart within, maybe emotionally driven, but everybody acted smart, which is one of the things that I hate shows where things happen. And you're like, the writers just couldn't figure out a better way to get us into this. I thought, The subject matter I liked. I've heard, you know, one reviewer is like, yeah, but it doesn't have a message. I'm like, oh, it has a message. You know, this is, you know, about, you know, our core forms of motivation and revenge and friendship. There's really, really strong things there. And
I think it's actually saying something. If you want to give it a capital I important message, I think it's really saying something about Hollywood. I think that the casting couch sports moments and the idea, like, what if the Avengers were real and they actually worked for Disney and Disney was only beholden to the shareholders, which, by the way, kind of reality.
Not to mention just the general theme of like power and celebrity.
Sure.
I understand the Hollywood part, but a big part of it too is a lot of the way they're treated like athletes, and the idea that if you're no longer useful to them, they trade you away. If you're injured, they trade you away. Yeah. You know, your value rises and falls by what your body can do.
So certainly with the race of the century or whatever they called it, you're right. That's another lens that everything.
But I think
juicing
these,
is
I think,
a little
all,
literal part of the story. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's all, and that's what I like. And then the thing, and I'm not getting into the premise is that, like, hey, you know, what if superheroes aren't all really super? And there's a point where you realize this is actually, I think I might be terrified to live in a world where a Superman could be a real person or the Flash or somebody, because that much power, you look at how we fear billionaires and people who have, you know, that kind of economic power. And that's another sort of analogy of it is, you know, when you have people who are untouchable, not just because of political protections, but physically untouchable because you can't police them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who Supermans the Supermans?
Yeah,
I have not watched The Boys, although I did watch about four episodes of it last night
over the shoulder of the guy sitting next to me on the plane who was watching it on his tablet with subtitles on.
How did it hold up?
Did it hold up?
So a few scenes where I was like, damn, it's a good show.
And I've heard from people who have read the books that it is it's a good adaptation of that story. It's not.
I've read a few that it takes the books probably a little bit further than the books went.
And I will say that it ends. If you had intended to just sort of tell one story, it could have ended punchier, but very clearly they're auditioning for a second series, season, and I was totally satisfied with the way it ended.
The Boys.
Well, you know, they announced the second season before the show premiered.
Oh, I'm almost certain we covered it on Cord Killers. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, which is exciting.
But it's great. It's great.
It's a good show. The Boys.
Yeah. I'm excited because once, you know, where the second season, if you're expecting a complete tidy arc, you're not going to get that, but you'll get a full story. And I'm excited about, because like season two, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm glad the fun did not stop because this is going to become even more terrifying and fun.
Yeah.
So,
and a lot of stuff happened. Like also, I mean, it's weird to say this, but I know I keep dipping my toes back into Lost, and the Boys just made me feel like, oh yeah, actually stuff is happening a lot. Like I'm not needing to
unlike
worry
a certain
about.
Other show that I just mentioned.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, boys, it's been weird. Next time, we will find out further on what happens with Prison Quest, just so you know.
Yeah, that only happens on episodes where one of the hosts hasn't had a gigantic television series.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.